welcome to the second episode of Your Time in the Run, the Hunted Series 7 podcast from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Harmstone, and I'm joined as always by my fellow Brit who gets a bollocking every time he misses a major life event, like, you know, my birthday yesterday, Anthony Williams.
Hello. Happy 44th, mate.
Thank you. I mean, I was hoisted by my own petard with that joke constantly. I love how also nobody corrected me on 24. I'm very much not 24. And the lady who has told her children that if they show, she'll blow up at them, Michelle Pierce-Denneman.
Hello, good evening.
Hello. How was the Australian Survivor finale last week, Michelle?
Oh, it was very good.
You enjoy yourself?
I did.
Good. Ant's been doing 4 gigs on 4 nights in a row, I believe.
I am, so I am a little bit tired, but at least some of them were marvellous, so I have some good memories.
You had Saturday a 50% success rate.
I did have a 50% success rate. I had 2 beautiful gigs. One that was all right, and one that was a bit of a horror show on Saturday night, but never mind.
These things happen.
Absolutely.
And also, on an Anthony Williams comedy note, a lot of the locations in this episode you may remember from when I saw you in Manchester.
Yes, yeah. I've stayed at that Hilton as well.
Yeah, I mean, that Hilton that obviously Steve got caught very close to is just around the corner from where you gigged.
Yeah,
I've seen you. They did walk past the pub where I have parked when I went to see you gigging as well.
Yeah, yeah, lots of fond memories of Manchester.
It's a literal walk down memory lane. Did you also catch the big Australian news story this week, Ant?
No, what was that?
That is the fact that you can now buy Tim Tams in Waitrose.
No, I did catch that, yes. I did catch that they were coming over.
Oh. Yes.
And then loads of people going, they're just posh penguins, what's the big deal?
Is that accurate, Michelle? Are they
I
just
don't know
posh
what
penguins?
A penguin is, though. But Tim Tams
it's like,
are just
do you get bourbon biscuits in Australia?
No, well, look, if I went looking for things, there's quite a lot of English things here and there, but I haven't heard of those.
So it's basically a bourbon biscuit covered in chocolate. I've not tried a Tim Tam, but I am led to believe they are remarkably similar, so...
I will say, now that I've moved up to Harmstone Heights, there is a Waitrose not a million miles away, so it is a slight temptation if I go near it to go, oh, I might try some Tim Tams.
Yeah, definitely. Report back next week.
You call your suburb Harmstone Heights.
There we go. I was waiting for Michelle to pick up on that. Harmstone Heights is my family and friends' jokey name for my house because it's on top of a hill.
God, no way. That's cool.
On a podcasting note as well, thank you to Rob from Series 5 and Liam from Series 6 for answering the could you fly question. I did ask Rob directly and then Liam actually listened to the podcast and told me as well. It looked like the rule changed before Series 5 and we just never knew about it. My suspicion is that it actually changed around about Series 3 because they probably changed the rule the same time that they actually let Lee and Hilmar do it in Hunted US.
Yeah, that makes sense. They probably saw it and thought, oh, actually, as long as you don't leave British airspace, that could be really cool.
We know there were some rules that definitely have changed since Series 3, so my guess is somewhere around Series 3 that rule actually changed, but I don't know for certain.
Hmm.
And our favourite hunter, well, mine and Ant's, we know who Michelle's is, Doug also got in contact with us and said the church with the distinctive stained glass window on Laura's Instagram story was the same church that was visible in the imagery of the garden of the Georgian townhouse. It was more of a case of working out direction and distance and what fell in the arcs to find out where the bed down location was. Not shown on the screen was another story on her account that suggested she was in the same place for breakfast, which is why we thought it was an overnight location and not just a stop for food.
Yeah,
so that answers Michelle's query from last week.
Mm.
Thank you to everyone who got involved. If you are involved in the show, and even if you're not, just get in contact with us at LTV Warriors on pretty much every social media, not TikTok, because I'm 31 now. So previously, 12 fugitives caught the tube towards Piccadilly Circus to begin their time on the run. Kathy and Anada had a couple of close misses with the hunters in central London before they managed to escape. Posh boys Jack and Alex said Harlow's, who friends' parents had camped out in their house and hid out in the woods as the hunters approached. But it was married sweeties Christine and Munya who bagged a lift from Heathrow before being tracked down in Nottingham and becoming the first team whose time on the run was over.
Now, I don't know if you caught it midweek, but Daisy did an interview with the other podcast talking a little bit about the Heathrow pickup.
I did say to Stephen Wensley when he told me about this that she's cheating on us and therefore no longer any of our favourite hunters. Yes, I was aware. I've not listened to it, but yeah, I was aware that she did do an interview.
Yeah, so
that joke as well for Belgian Mole fans will also be repeated in the Diary of a Mole Finale 3 episode this year, because Jill also cheated on us. And I will be having words with him in May. Was there anything interesting in the interview about it?
I would listen to the first bit. And then it's taking too long to get to the juicy bits.
I love how I know these guys listen to our podcast as well, so this is a fun critique for them.
They're great people, so yeah, it was. I didn't get a chance to listen to it all. I'm hoping to listen to it today. But in essence, yeah, it was pretty much what we said. It was just, they knew pretty much where they were. They've got great work going behind the scenes on CCTV, and they managed to pick up the number plate, and the rest is history, basically.
It made a lot of sense when Doug was sending us messages about it last week.
Yeah.
So Alex runs back to the woods and reunites with Jack. He leaves his bag behind and says that stinging nettles are temporary, hunters are permanent.
So is stupidity.
We were having this chat before we started recording. Like, obviously, it wasn't birthday yesterday and Belgian Mole came back, so I was watching that mainly to do a Twitter joke. So I didn't end up watching Hunted until about midnight. And I wasn't sure whether it was just me being a bit delirious from being up a bit too late, knowing I was going to be recording at 10 o'clock, or whether everyone was just a moron in this episode.
It was just...
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. All of the above.
I think the polite answer is both.
Mm.
Yes. Let's get on and pick them apart.
Because when I did watch this episode, I sent a message to our group chat just going, no spoilers, but I think Michelle will end up having an aneurysm about this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Just wow.
So he sees the hunters at the shepherd's hut in the distance, but they separate on day two. Georgina finds Alex's bag containing £200 and the magic notebook with all of their contacts in it. And she places a quote-unquote covert tracker inside the bag, and they erect a sentry camera facing the hut, suspecting that the boys will return for the bag.
Mm-hmm. Just don't leave stuff lying around, please, fugitives. Leave anything anywhere, ever.
My favourite thing about this is the ending of last episode was Jack in the woods going, I'm really paranoid about this, we need to leave. And Alex going, no, everything will be fine. No one's going to turn up here.
Well, do you think the money came from the Troas? Because they've only done one. They've not taken that much out of ATMs. So.
Yeah, it must have done because, as you said, they've not taken that much out of the ATM, and we know that they only took £40 out in central London, which suggests that they probably haven't done another ATM run.
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
It does seem to be quite liberal with the amount of money people are allowed to give them now. It certainly never used to be the case that they could give them that much money, I don't think.
Not that I recall. I just thought it was interesting that they mentioned the amount. So they obviously want us to know they had £200. So don't know.
And they were very cagey last week about how much money they actually get when they're going on the run now. Mm-hmm. As they so often are, to be honest. But yes, it was interesting. Beth and Steve are camping in Peterborough. She tries to burn all her hair extensions off using a camping stove. And she says she has all the fundamentals. She goes to Tesco every week to shop. She never needs to get on a bus as they're a bit grotty. I mean, as much as I know I'm going to incur Michelle's ire, I agree. And she also knows Zara back to front, so that's where she'd hide if they got separated.
Yeah, brilliant. Genius. She's clearly destined to win.
Burning her hair. Her hair extensions. Just that right there. Right there tells you there's an issue.
I love how I could just predict that Beth is going to be the one that would irritate Michelle the most.
Oh, God. Never been on a bus. Never been on a bus.
I know.
I went on your English buses. They're not that bad.
Yeah.
They're all right.
They're not that
bad. Yeah, I've been on a fair amount of buses, but, you know, given the choice between public transport or driving myself somewhere, I'm going to drive myself somewhere.
Sorry, you never mentioned the one thing that was an issue, though. She cut herself. I can see the bone. What's this white
see
bit?
The bone.
Jesus Christ. Oh, God. What's the white bit? Is it a bit of your hair extension, love? I don't know. But seriously, it's not the bone.
I just love that they haven't touched upon dubbing her a wannabe influencer last week as well.
Yeah.
And yet she wasn't the one we saw on TikTok this week.
I wouldn't know. I'm 51.
Well, officially, I mean, we all know what your real age is, but Steve says that for him, it's about more than evading the hunters. It's about proving that he can still do it despite his skin cancer diagnosis in 2018. It woke him up to how short life is. They have a water fight. And I have three words now, which is big winner energy.
Yeah, that's what I had going on. But that was all coming from Steve. So,
yeah.
Strange.
See, I was trying to think back to any posters that I saw in 2022. Because I think a poster that I saw was for two young women. But there are no all-female teams who are younger than about 70 on this series.
Harsh.
Kathy and Adam haven't responded yet. Until they do, I'll keep teasing them. So I don't know what the situation's actually going to be with wanted posters. Is it going to be that there's a lot of split-offs this series and then they just merged the poster for two girls who got to a certain time? Or because usually they do separate posters. If people split off
yeah,
and they're from separate teams, they will do separate posters. But there was definitely a poster that was two 20s women on the same one for this series. And I can't think who it was. I mean, I suspect now Beth might be one of them, but I can't remember for certain.
It's a long while ago and I was trying to stay away from it. So
people just send us on social media and go, oh my God, have you seen this wanted poster? I'm like, please don't. Please just leave me alone with this. Just don't send me spoilers, even though it's 2 years down the line.
It's like people and Survivor. Like, I've got someone behind the scenes who knows a lot of cameramen, and he'll say, what part of the episode are you up to now? Are you up to? And I'm like, I can't even read what he's going to say because he knows the answers. Like, these production people tell him who gets voted out. So I can't even look at his messages during an episode because he cannot help himself. He just can't help himself.
And to be fair, those episodes are long. Those episodes are like 15 hours long. So you have to stay on social media so long, Michelle.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as we've previously discussed, I do watch Married at First Sight. Those episodes are very long. I haven't even seen last night's, even though I know what happened.
Stop it. Stop watching that crap.
No, it's still better than Australian Survivor.
It is never. Do not. Be quiet.
There's a reason it gets four times the ratings, Michelle.
because it goes to the lowest denomination of people who watch it. And there's a lot of them.
Well, some of my friends, I mean, one of them you might actually know, Ant, because one of them's a stand-up as well. They're actually holding a Married at First Sight watch party with one of the experts in a few weeks. And sadly, I can't go because it's in Newcastle.
Oh, God. You got lucky.
I've already seen that episode and I was going to go to their event and I can't. It's in aid of Bowel Cancer UK. So Steve decides to give Beth control of their movements for the day, and she decides that they're going to do the logical thing and go and see her best friend, Lulu, in Manchester, where Beth now lives.
Yep,
smart move, yeah.
Going directly towards where the hunters are almost certainly going to be on about day three. Always a logical move, guys.
Go to exactly where they're expecting you to be and with a friend that is blatantly, obviously linked to you. Can't beat it.
HQ then review the intelligence. They think that she's a daddy's girl and he's potentially missing his 25th wedding anniversary. And Mark says that the only thing you get for a 25th wedding anniversary if you miss it is a bollocking.
Some good lines from Mark and Raimondo this week.
Yeah. I mean, this edit was incredibly misleading for Steve because I think if you watched the first half of this episode, you'd go, yeah, Beth and Steve are probably both making it. Steve definitely is going to make it.
Yeah, it was really weird. Everything was pointing all the emotional backstory, the music, how much fun they appeared to be having. All of that was like, oh, yeah, here we go. This will be their last scene in this episode, and then we'll see them pop up in about three episodes' time. But no, weird.
And I don't think they were in the TV description either.
I try not to read that because they give way too many spoilers.
They do, but that's, I mean, TV description is how I knew that Jackson and Nicola were in this episode, so I could talk about it last week. But they were the only one of the three teams in this episode who weren't mentioned, I don't think. I think it was just Jackson and Nicola and Jack and Alex.
Okay.
Which I thought was a very interesting decision by production. They're obviously trying to mislead us a bit more, which is great because we usually pick the winners pretty early on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm all for this. Throw us off the scent. Please do so.
As I've said on Mole Podcast many a time, I don't mind being wrong as long as it makes sense.
Yep.
By quote-unquote effecting entry, Paul finds a message from Lulu in Beth's flat about her moving to Manchester and how much she can't wait to see her and how she's definitely going to help her on the run.
Yep.
Yeah, no words.
No, none. Just continue. Let's get to the next bad bit for her.
We sort of expect Michelle to go stupid a lot, but we never expect Ant to do it as well.
That was my thought all the way through. I was watching it just going, it's not normally me that just says stupid repeatedly for an hour.
I think we've already had about five off Michelle in this episode alone.
God.
And Ray says that he's more worried about Steve than Beth and would be even more worried if Steve was running on his own, which, I mean, is a bit of foreshadowing for Beth probably winning on her own here.
I know, but
how?
I just can't see that. I know. How is that going to happen?
It's impossible.
I mean, if it does, oh, it'll be so glorious if that happens, but it's going to be just by absolute sheer luck.
My gut after this episode is that probably at least one of Jack and Alex is going to make it, and probably Beth, because it is such a shame situation for the Hunters.
Mm.
Because they obviously really, really hate Jack and Alex for being posh Tory boys,
yep,
as Lisa keeps calling them. They obviously really hate Beth for being a wannabe influencer, daddy's princess, all that sort of stuff. How mortifying would it be for HQ if both of those end up winning? That's certainly where I think we're being led at the moment. And watch both of them get caught next week or something. But that's certainly where we're being led by the editor at the moment, I think.
Well, yeah, it has to be.
Something we didn't really talk about last week as well is that in the intro-y thing that they did of the series, there was someone opening the briefcase of 100 grand, which suggests to me that someone does end up winning. Ooh. It isn't a clean sweep.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like someone standing on the rooftop of the Bullring Shopping Centre car park from the Hunters opening it to prove the money was in there. It looked like someone sat on a plane or something opening the briefcase to me.
Yeah, I can't see them having a clean sweep.
No, I don't think it's going to be a clean sweep this year. I mean, famous last words, but we'll see. So Jack continues on the run on his own and drinks from a river, which I'm sure was perfectly safe.
Oh, why? Do you do that in England? You don't do that
No.
here?
No.
No, I've seen the water.
What did he do that for?
Because he's got no idea. Oh,
Jesus. It's like one thing after another here. It doesn't stop.
That was the first point where I went stupid.
I mean, how did they even get split up in the first place? They're only in the grounds of a house, for God's sake.
They're 2 miles apart.
How did that happen?
Oh. Because the estate, like I said last week, the estate is a great place to hide because it's fucking massive.
I know, but to get 2 miles apart, that's an hour's walk, easily.
Like, at no point did he look back. Obviously.
Well, I think basically when they last saw each other, Alex said, no, I'm going to leave my backpack, we just got to go. And then he had a change of heart and didn't decide to tell Jack about it.
Just unbelievable.
That's certainly how I interpreted it. But yeah, they do somehow get split up in 2 miles apart. I mean, they're going to be a lot more miles apart next week, but that's beside the point. Alex is 2 miles away, as we said, still looking at the Shepherd Hut and planning on getting his bag back, which is definitely going to be a good idea, especially when you know the Hunters have been there and probably are going to have placed at least a secret camera or a tracker, or maybe both, somewhere nearby.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yay, go back for it. I mean, number one, don't leave stuff, right? Because if you don't leave stuff, you don't get in this situation. Number two, if you have left stuff, it is gone. Just leave it. Forget about it. He's not going to help, you know.
And also, if they leave it there, then his friend's parents could probably still get that 200 quid to him.
Yeah. Yeah, potentially.
Like, that money is not lost necessarily.
Stupid.
Your turn.
So he sees that, as he calls it, the Range Rover is gone. It's actually a Land Rover. But enters the Shepherd's Hut, and HQ get images from the Sentry Cam at 1852. The ground hunters follow the checker, and he worries about a bug, but doesn't find it in the bag.
And then, in a spectacular piece of good luck, ditches the bag anyway.
Yeah. He has the nous to actually go, well, just because I've not found a tracker doesn't mean there isn't one, so I'm going to have to swap the bag out. But also, I don't want to cry monkeying with the timeline here, but it does look suspiciously light for 6:52 p.m. or even about 8 o'clock by the time the hunters get there. I know this was filmed in summer, but still, that looks like midday to me.
It's June, isn't it?
It is June, so sunset probably would have been about 8:30. But it does look, it looks the middle of the day when he goes into that shepherd's hut at allegedly 1852.
Don't know.
So he does move his things to another backpack as the hunters search the house. I mean, they're not there at the same time. We didn't see them in the same shot. All the classics.
Oh, it was a beautiful piece of editing, though, that was. When they were switching back and forth. Who is it? We're nearly there. And then, yeah, that was lovely. Well done, production. You edited that seamlessly.
Yeah, this was a great episode. I don't want to make it sound like we're criticizing this episode at all, because they managed to mislead us about Steve getting caught. But also, I don't think that was 1852 when he was there. I don't think it was just after 7 o'clock or whatever when the hunters got there to search the house. It looks far, far too light to me. And they miss his escape and they're not best pleased. Alex knows that they've been through the bag and got the list, and Lisa says she completely underestimated the posh little rich boys.
Yep, don't like that, but I'll let it pass.
What, she let them go, or just generally all of their actions?
No, that she's calling them posh little rich boys. I don't like the labeling.
I think the reason for that is they're posh little rich boys.
Yeah. No, you're going to say that.
I mean, of all the insults that Lisa has given people in the past few series.
It's a nice correct one.
This is both factually correct and fairly nice. Yeah. I mean, the oft-quoted Michelle Pierce Denovan line of, he looks like a bellend, is probably still up there. Calling them posh little rich boys is probably not even the worst thing they've been called on this series.
Yes.
I still think Jack being accused of looking like a red-faced Piers Morgan last week is probably a bit harsher.
And also, quite accurate.
So in Reading, Jackson and Nicola have spent the night with a friend, and apparently he snored since he was a girl, and he transitioned 18 months ago, as we discussed last week. Mm-hmm. Nicola says she never suspected it. She always thought that Jackson was just a lesbian growing up. They're doing this adventure to do something as Jackson and Nicola, not Jessica and Nicola. And as we see, every Thursday he has to do a testosterone shot in his leg. Otherwise, his voice will go 17 octaves higher.
But I thought this bit of backstory was really good. Really, really nice. Really well done. Right. Sensitively handled. Excellent work. I just hope it doesn't bring the trolls out from under the bridge and they get loads of backlash. Because...
But also Jackson could probably take them, given that he's a prison officer. Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was very interestingly handled. I suspect Jackson probably had a hand in how the story was told, at least in terms of the introduction. I did think it was very interesting that they were very casual with dead naming Jackson, which doesn't usually happen. Obviously, Jackson and Nicola would have had to be comfortable with that happening.
Yeah, I think, you know, from people I know in the community, you know, everybody's on their own individual journey, aren't they? So, I thought it was done really, really nicely.
Oh, they handled it beautifully. I just thought it was very interesting that they did make that decision, because usually in this sort of a story, they don't.
Yeah, I think, like you said, absolutely. I would imagine Jackson wanted his story to be told, and they've done it in a really, really good way.
I also think it's really interesting that at this point, we're probably 3.5 years into Jackson's transition. So this is over half of the transition ago.
Yeah.
HQ find out, looking at Jackson's social media, about the transition, and they're worried about the strength of the pairing. Ground hunters find a note with loads of information in it in Jackson's house.
Hang on. The second notebook in one episode.
I know.
Have you got me on? Like, seriously. Second in one episode? What is wrong with these people? Seriously.
You'll notice I was trying to finish the sentence so that I could just give Michelle the ranting
you
time.
You can't.
just could not get through that. It was.
Couldn't.
I mean, you know, we're on the opposite side of the world, and I could feel that. I could feel that coming.
It's like I said, I was expecting Michelle to have an aneurysm watching this episode, because not only do we have Beth being Beth, we have Alex's notebook, we have Jackson's notebook, and then we have a whole bunch of other bullshit associated.
But I was watching and I thought, hang on, is that the same notebook from before? Is it Jack and Alex's? And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to rewind this bit and watch it again. I'm like, it's not even the same notebook. I'm like, what the hell?
My favorite thing is, in the trailer for this episode last week, they didn't mention Alex's notebook. They only showed us Jackson's.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I think me and Stephen Wensley were like, yeah, I think that's probably Alex's notebook. And then there was like, oh no, that was Alex's notebook. This is another notebook.
Like what?
What are these people doing? Please, if you ever go on this show and you're listening, if you've got anything written down, it has to be on your person. From the minute you write it down to the minute you get caught or win the game, you cannot leave anything lying around. Please.
Or, even better idea, memorise the numbers.
Well, yeah, just don't have things written down. But if you've got to, don't let them leave your person.
Like, not to get too memory nerd about this, but there is a reason phone numbers are formatted the way they are, and that's to make them memorable. The human brain can remember 6 numbers at a time in one go. So just remember it in a 5 and a 6, in the case of most mobile numbers. Simples.
Jeez Louise.
We then get a brief update on the two pairs that we're not going to see this week, which is Kathy and Anada and Sade and Cameron. Kathy and Anada are still inexplicably in central London.
I know, we didn't get a clear timeline, did we? We're somewhere between days 2 and 5, I think, at that stage. So who knows how long they're in London. They maybe just spend the whole 3 weeks in London. Who knows?
And they're pretending to punch the chief.
They are funny.
Yeah,
I do like these.
And I think they are going to end up being our banner, just with them giving, well, with one of them giving the double bird to the hunters whilst looking at Tower Bridge. But yeah, I thought it was interesting we actually got a reminder of their existence. I don't know whether that feeds into maybe them doing better than we'd anticipate.
It usually does, doesn't it? You know, if they pop up but there's no story, it normally means their story comes later. So, but, you know, we thought all the clues were saying Steve was going to go far. So I don't really know. Similar with Sade and Cameron, you know, a literal skipping through a field shot.
Mm.
Well, in previous seasons, that was your Nick winner at it from start to finish. So who knows?
And also telling us that Cameron used to be a professional runner.
I know. I really hope that comes back and he's just off. I want to see Jordan or someone chasing after him. Just,
yes.
Just
oh my gosh. I need a run to happen.
Yeah, this is the thing, because Jordan is an endurance athlete. He paddleboarded like 2/3 of the British coast before he had to call it off for injury and stuff. Like, the dude can do endurance athletics.
Yeah, that's why I want to see it.
But we know the hunters at least get close to Sade and Cameron at some point because of the very start of the first episode. Because they were the ones that we saw milling about the road and the hunters driving past. I wonder whether Cameron is going to get away and Sade won't in that case.
Mm. We don't know enough about either of them yet. So it's hard to tell what sort of picture they're trying to paint.
This year certainly seems to be the series of dividing people up straight away. For a series of 6 pairs, we already have one of them caught and 2 of them split up.
Yeah.
In Manchester, Beth warns Steve to stop talking to people right outside the wharf where I parked when I saw Ant do his stand-up comedy before COVID. It's a lovely pub that it's a little bit expensive, but it is a very nice pub. She has turned up at Lulu's apartment unannounced, but she doesn't seem to be there. And just to compound Michelle's irritation, she rings Lulu off one of her neighbour's phones and tells her exactly where she is.
Yep.
Obviously.
I wonder how they got into the apartment building.
They'd have just buzzed loads.
Yeah, they probably just got in when people just walk in. You follow someone in.
Yeah, they've tailgated or they've just buzzed a load and said, you know, can you let me in?
Dr. Steve Hersey is in charge of looking at Beth's network, and HQ decides to put everything of Lulu's on monitoring, albeit after Beth has rung her. And she decides to, you know, do the really logical thing of booking a Hilton in the centre of Manchester for £155.
I know, £155 a room or two for £310. Sounds like a bargain. Yeah.
I mean, lovely hotel, know exactly where it is. Have stayed in a lot of hotels around there. Certainly haven't stayed in that one because, you know, £155, bloody hell.
I have.
Yeah, you have. I mean, one of my friends, I think that might be the one where one of my friends actually lived for a year.
Oh my God.
I stayed there just before lockdown, just before the pandemic, because we stayed there and then we went to see Hamilton. So literally, I think it was literally the last show before it got shut down.
I went to see Hamilton in December.
It's an amazing show.
It is an amazing show, I will agree. Mum and Dad weren't that enthused when people started rapping, but they were very much into it when it got more R&B.
Yeah, I always said your parents' down was more of an R&B kind of vibe, yeah.
When we got to Light Satisfied, they were appropriately satisfied. Dr. Steve Hersey then makes a connection, and Grand Hunters are sent towards the Hilton, and they keep an eye on the CCTV of the Hilton. HQ then review Jackson's notebook, looking for clues of where they could be. Only three names are attached to a location from the list, and they're all around York. And one of them, Mick, is put on intercept.
Oh, I can't even. Right. Just, what are you doing?
This whole episode is just a nightmare.
It's just a mess, isn't it?
It's just a nightmare. It's awful. You can't...
I'm very much loving just saying bits from this episode and just hearing Michelle go...
You just can't comment because they're just so stupid.
It's just a bit to say, is there? It's just like, what are you doing?
Why? What is wrong with you? Have you watched a show before? Ever? Ever?
Jackson and Nicola are in York, but they're with family friend Phil instead. Mick owns a haulage business, so they want to use him to go to Cardiff. But they're afraid of the hunters having his details. Correct to be afraid. Phil instead offers to get them a hotel room and drive them himself. Now, I don't want to accuse them of monkeying with the timeline here, but they didn't monkey with the timeline, they monkeyed with the locations. Because they say, oh yeah, we're in York, so we're going to go to a hotel around the corner in Rishworth. That is not near to York.
Oh, I didn't.
That is, as they say later on, very close to Halifax.
Yeah.
York is a lovely bit of Yorkshire. Halifax, not so much.
All of Yorkshire's lovely, Michael.
No, York is wasted on Yorkshire. York is a beautiful city, the rest of Yorkshire not so much. And Mick places a call at 1:57 PM to Phil, and Phil says, quote unquote, the pies have been squashed. HQ interpret that as the plans have been squashed, but no. What he actually says is the pies have been squashed, presumably because they're from Wigan.
I didn't spot that, and I think the subs said plans as well.
Did they? I thought it was pies. It certainly sounded like pies to me.
I mean, that would make sense because they're from Wigan. But yeah, I didn't catch that, but okay.
Maybe at 12:30 when I was watching this, I was, you know, still hungry.
Maybe you're giving them too much credit there.
If he said the plans have been squashed, that is, to quote Michelle, stupid. If he said pies, then at least it's a little bit more subtle. I mean, HQ interpreted it correctly, but...
Yep.
HQ get more information on Phil, and the hunters head towards Halifax. And the next morning, they're worried that Phil has forgotten, so ring him using the landlord's phone, which obviously HQ get. And Phil says another driver is coming, but the ground teams are only 10 minutes out. And it turns out the other driver is Jackson and Nicola's dad, who, I'm sure, the BMW 4 is definitely not on monitoring.
Oh no, why would they even think of such a thing?
Especially when hunters have already been round to their parents' house and nicked the iPad and looked at all of his secret iCloud folders.
I do love it, though, when they throw in edit points like, we're 30 seconds away. Yeah, you're 30 seconds away from the pub. They might have left 5 hours ago, but yes, you are 30 seconds away from that pub.
Yeah, there was no way they were near to Jackson and Nicola there.
Not even close.
HQ gets CCTV of a black BMW driving in and Jackson and Nicola getting into it, but they don't know what the car is because for some reason they've not monitored the parents' car. Unless, of course, it isn't the parents' car.
Mm. It could have been borrowed.
That's the only credit I'm willing to give them.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, there was stupidity on both sides in this episode. There were points when I was like, "What? What are you doing, Hunters? You could have easily done that."
Yeah, it seems like a rookie move if that is Jackson and Nicola's dad's car. It seems very stupid.
Yeah.
So in Manchester, Beth and Steve are having a spa day.
And then she said, "Oh, maybe we can still have a swim, like go to the pool at what? Lulu's place." I'm like, wow, okay, stay a bit longer there, then go to the Hilton to do something else. Yeah.
And the beautiful line from Beth, "The Hunters won't think I'm stupid enough to do this." No, they know you are stupid enough to do this, Beth. We all know you are.
On the Beth winning thing, I think it would infuriate the Hunters a lot more if she does stuff like accidentally escape behind a bus and not realise she's doing it.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. If she does make it to the end, there'll be lots more of those where, you know, pure luck, she manages to fluke her way to the end, because that's the only way they can possibly make the edit make sense, is that she flukes it.
Yeah, I think at this point, Beth is probably at least making it towards the end, if not winning, purely because this episode was essentially Steve passing the torch and going, right, I have taught you enough, you need to have actually listened to me now, and do what the Hunters don't expect you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if she does end up winning, then this will be a very important episode for that.
She's lost the plot, though, in the cab. Oh, in the car.
Gotcha.
Have you seen her? She's beside herself.
She spent 20-odd years relying on her father completely, and now she's actually got to fend for herself.
But the most logical reason for including that scene is that she overcomes that.
Yeah, exactly.
If she gets caught next week, that scene's irrelevant, isn't it?
Yeah, that scene basically ends up being the motivation in her edit to go, well, the Hunters have caught Dad, so I need to do this for both of us now. Because we even had Steve when he did get caught, and I know we're skipping over a bit of this, but when Steve got caught and when he was talking to Lisa, he's like, well, no, she's going to do it for me now.
Mm.
As long as she's still in the game, we still have a chance. And they would not have put all that stuff in if she ended up getting caught straight away, I don't think.
I don't think so. It's unnecessary if she's about to get caught.
So HQ get CCTV of Beth in the Hilton, and James and Jordan are once again sent in to investigate, because there's no other ground hunters. And it appears that it's already the next day, and the Hunters are just going to try and get them coming out of the main entrance at checkout time. If they show, they blow. So to blend in with the crowd, 7-series-long Hunter Jordan decides to wear civilian clothes, and James, who arguably they've never seen before, hides around a car park entrance, you know, in the most subtle place.
Yeah, exactly that. They have no idea what James looks like. He's in civvies, so he decides to position himself where his best view of what's going on gets continually obscured by buses. Genius. Brilliant.
I was thinking this when I was watching the episode, that actually, the Hunters' main asset is, because they have such turnover, because they bring in new people to be ground hunters every series, the fugitives don't know who they're looking for.
Yeah.
And in that situation as well, they're super paranoid, so they're going to think anybody could be a hunter, so actual hunters are not going to look any different to anybody else. It was just bizarre. Like, why are you hiding behind a wall, James? What's the point of putting in civvies on then?
If you're going to do some covert surveillance with any of the ground hunters, you don't do it with Paul and you don't do it with Jordan, because they've been around forever and everyone knows who they are. They are the two hunters you don't do it with the most. And actually probably Georgina, because she did both series of The Heist, then the last two series of this. And, you know, you can probably hear her before you see her, because she's got a very loud voice.
The whole way through this scene, all I was thinking was, Beth's going to sneak out here. They're building this far too much. No way are they going to catch Beth at this point.
And also, those Manchester buses are not very tall. They are single-decker buses. Like, there is no way that you can really sneak past using one of them unless you're doing it completely fluky. It's a very bad spot for them to do surveillance on.
Yep.
And arguably, it's probably dictated by where they can actually film, but, you know, that's me looking behind the curtain a bit too much. So Beth and Steve plan to leave 10 seconds apart in case the Hunters are there. They're not allowed to leave via the back entrance, even though they did ask nicely.
Yeah, I mean, 10 seconds separation, that'll definitely throw him off the scent. Yeah, whole 10 seconds. Oh, yeah, no problem there.
I mean, the hunters do only work in single cars, so, you know, one person, they're not going to be able to catch both of us.
Not with a 10-second gap. Come on.
The better plan here would have been to have Steve chill for half an hour or whatever, and then at least there would have been a chance that both of them could have got away. Yes, they might have ended up splitting up, but they could have come up with a rendezvous point.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the way to do it, isn't it? You know, let's meet up in a couple of hours. We'll go completely separate ways to the rendezvous point. That way, if they are on their tail, only one of them is likely to get caught.
Also, revolutionary idea, just because checkout is 11 doesn't mean you have to leave at 11. I know she wanted a nice breakfast, but maybe don't both leave at 11 o'clock. So unfortunately for HQ, James's view of reception is obscured by the bus. The bus leaves and it appears that Beth has got away from them. However, Jordan does spot Steve and tails him. He has eyes on approaching the car park, and Steve is still oblivious and his time on the run is over. And he can't believe it.
And neither can we, because that edit did not say Steve's getting caught today.
And Beth realises that Steve has been caught, and she doesn't think she can do it without him, and this storyline could have been seen a mile off. Oh, you know, like I predicted last week. Did predict, I believe, that Beth and Steve would end up splitting up, and that the boys would as well. So, you know, great episode for me. And Lisa promises that she will return Beth home and put everything in to make sure that Beth returns home immediately. And the episode ends as Beth cries in the car, realising that she's going to have to go it alone.
Cries? She loses the plot.
The interesting advantage that Beth does have, and it was something she mentioned in her little sobbing fest in the car, is that Steve had all the maps. Which isn't necessarily a disadvantage for her.
No, because it means she's going to have to scrap anything that they had planned, which is great, because if they've left any other clues elsewhere, which they probably have, let's be honest, they're no use anymore. So she's going to have to start from scratch, which is the best thing she could do.
And also, despite what Michelle's inevitably going to scream say at me in a minute, Beth is actually quite personable. Mm. If Beth does a kindness of strangers idea like Nick did, she's going to win. If Beth just relies on people she has never met before and just charms them, which I think she probably has the potential to do, then she's going to end up getting to that extraction point.
Yep. Yeah. But it's going to be seat of the pants, total fluke. You know, something will play out that she tries to do something, it fails, and as a result, she does something completely different, which will be what gets her through.
Yeah. She's going to have to have a lot more self-confidence and self-belief to do it, but I think that Beth can absolutely do it. And obviously, I don't know any spoilers or anything, but I would at this point put money on Beth winning, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet against it.
You have a lot of faith.
I have a lot of faith in the edit, Michelle. I have no faith in Beth whatsoever. Yes.
That's where it comes from.
The problem that we have is after 8 years of watching the show, we know how the edit works quite well. They can occasionally surprise us, like with Steve getting caught, but we have a reasonable idea of where these things are going to end up going, I think.
But please prove us wrong. That's the best thing that happens when we're like, did not see that coming.
Yeah, I mean, if this is just setting up for Kathy and Anna to win, I am very much here for it. So next time, the hunters get closer to Beth, Jack boards a plane, and Jackson and Nicola hide in a fun fair.
Hee-hee. Some good locations. Should be fun.
Which suggests to me that probably we're not going to get introduced to Sade and Cameron again, and probably we're not going to see much of Kathy and Anadis, so they're probably doing quite well as well.
Yeah, you would assume so.
Anything else you want to say about this episode?
I just can't remember an episode in the past where there's been absolutely no redeeming features.
Yeah.
Do you know, it was a fun episode, but there was nothing in that episode where I was like, nice, good, I like that, from either side.
Yeah.
No, nothing.
I mean, this episode did have a distinct lack of Doug, which is a major negative for us. We did hear him at one point in the episode, but we never saw him. And I'm sure Michelle is heartbroken we didn't see that much of Daisy either.
Or Dr. Donna, really.
And yeah. It was a distinct lack of brain power. Total brain power. Sorry.
I will also say, when I was driving my brother down to mum and dad's yesterday, we were talking about the fact that we were recording Hunted this morning. I said, Michelle was on top form on Monday, and then we were talking about you talking about Daisy, and he did start laughing when I did the impression of you going, she's a bit of all right. As you English people would say.
Yeah, you would.
Right, thank you for listening to our Hunted recap. We'll be back this time next week for another episode. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, where we're RTV Warriors, or you can email us and contact at rtvwarriors.com. Anthony is on the artist formerly known as Twitter at PulseBoy. Michelle is Bear 3233233233, and I'm MJ Armstone. We will see you next Tuesday for episode number 3. But with that, for this week, your time in the run is over.
Bye-bye.
Bye.